Welcome to the Go Hack Something podcast, where education and technology meet. On today's episode, I'm going to talk about being an online content provider and what lessons I've learned over the years. I'm your host, Will Bushy, author of Wired for Coding, and my co-host, Ross Wickman. He's busy behind the scenes, but he'll be joining us again in some future episodes. So in today's episode, I want to talk a little bit about being an online content provider. In addition to this podcast, I've got a few other channels and things that I do. I've got a couple courses over on Udemy where I teach video game programming. And the audience is not necessarily kids, but that's what the original material was created for. I also have a YouTube channel that's got quite a following. And then I also do a few other things with my online book, or with my book in digital form as well as in print form. And then I've got an Instructables page as well. If you're not familiar with that platform, I'll talk a little bit about that too. So before we get into that, I want to talk just a little bit about some of the things that I've been up to since my last episode. And I know they've been a little bit sporadic, but we took a little hiatus off as we kind of got the kids back to school. And I was working on a few other projects, and Ross was kind of busy with some things too. But now we're going to get back into it and hope to release an episode about once a week. We might skip a week here and there. I do have a couple special guests already lined up as well. It's just a matter of getting things scheduled. Now, this episode is not going to come out for a few weeks after I record it. So some of the things I talk about here will have already happened by the time you hear them. But anyway, over the last couple of weeks and leading up into next week, I've been doing a little bit more speaking around the area. Last week, I was up at Dakota State University speaking to a group of educators from the business departments around different universities. And they'd asked me to come up and speak a little bit about what I've been doing around technology and entrepreneurship. It was a lot of fun. I spent about an hour talking to them, and I covered a lot of the things that I've been doing here around Sioux Falls, both with our events that we've been running, our kids' education events, but also what we've been seeing and some of the mentoring that I've been doing for small businesses and entrepreneurs, and then just some of the things that I speak about and talk about in our community. So it was a lot of fun. It was kind of a speech slash presentation that I had never given before, but it also is kind of dovetailing nicely into what I'm doing next week. And that's going to be down at a conference in Yankton, where I've got about 1,000 middle or high school kids set up over a couple of different sessions that I'm going to be talking about. And there I'm going to be talking specifically about entrepreneurship, technology, building things today, and a lot of the events that I've created over the last few years. But that's also another cool event where I kind of thought it was interesting because of what I'm talking about to build something cool. And so I built a Twitter bot, and this is a physical bot that is controllable via Twitter. I think I talked about this on a few other episodes. In the next episode, I'm going to talk specifically about that Twitter bot, how I built it, why I built it, things like that. So that'll be another fun one. And then the other thing is I've got another presentation coming up at the end of October here at something called Code Camp in Sioux Falls. It's a little bit more of a technical discussion. Each year they put on a code camp. They've got about 100 to 120 attendees. It's just one Saturday. And the idea is how do we get some of the great technical people in our town to come out and present on a topic that they're very familiar with, and then just meant to be more of a learning, collaborative kind of networking event. And I've not attended before, and I've also not presented before, but one of the other presenters reached out to me and said, "Hey, you know, I'd love to have you come and talk and do something for the community here." And so we got to talking back and forth about some potential ideas. And what I ended up deciding to do was to talk about the home automation system that I built for my house. And I talked briefly about that here on past episodes, but I'll dive a little bit deeper into that into a future episode. Some of the things that I built are kind of funny and crazy, but I really had a good time building it. And I thought I would just walk through the process of how I built it, why I did what I did, and then also some of the technologies and the platforms that I've used. One other quick update on my 3D printer. The last episode was on my 3D printer. Now, at the time, I just replaced the extruder on it with a $15 extruder, and it was working really, really well. I've since kind of tweaked some of the settings and the parameters, and I got to say, it's printing phenomenal. One of the things that I thought I would do is for this conference down in Yankton, I made some little medallion or keychains with a hash symbol since it's a Twitter bot. And I've been printing those out. I figured I'd print maybe 100 or so, maybe a little bit more, and just hand them out to anybody that either asks questions or would like one. So I've been just kind of running that here. It takes about an hour and 20 minutes to print a dozen of them. So in my spare time, I've just been hitting the print button, but I've been super impressed with the quality with that new extruder. So if you happen to have an old 3D printer, you may want to look into replacing that extruder. I got to say, it's been the biggest improvement I've made on that 3D printer. All right, so let's talk about the main topic of today's podcast, and that is being an online content provider. Now, the reason this topic even came up, and it wasn't really my idea, but somebody, it's a team of people at Udemy, reached out to me. It was part of their UIX department, the user interface experience department. And they said, hey, we're doing these surveys. We'd love to kind of interview some of the content providers. I don't know how they picked me, or maybe they sent it to everybody and just the people that responded, they went ahead and chose the ones they wanted to talk with. But I did respond to them. I said, hey, love to chat. I've got some opinions about your platform. I've got some ideas. I've got some suggestions. And obviously, I've got a lot of other non-Udemy type platforms out there as well. So I thought I had some good insight as to the industry as a whole. So I got on the phone with a couple of women that were in that department, and we were originally scheduled for, I think, about an hour and 15 minutes or so. We ended up going a little bit long, but it was a really good conversation, and they asked a lot of great questions just about my use of their platform and then my use of other platforms and how they kind of compared and what I liked about them, what I didn't like about them. And I was very open with where I make money on these different platforms and how people in general are making money on these platforms today. And it might come to no surprise to any of you guys, especially if you've got your own platforms out there, it's really, really hard to make money with just creating a single course within a platform like Udemy, or even creating a YouTube channel. A lot of people that are monetizing them in alternative ways. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how I've been monetizing a lot of my different content mediums out there over the last few years. Things that have worked and things that haven't worked. So the first thing I want to do is just kind of cover some of the channels that I have online. So I mentioned Udemy already, or Udemy. That is if you're not familiar with Udemy, it's a platform where anybody that wants to can teach something. And they prefer to have video, but you can also do just text or worksheets. And they've got a great interface to be able to log in, kind of define your segments and your lessons and your curriculum. And then if you want to shoot video, you can upload video. And if you want, you can upload audio or slides if you just want to have an all slides one. Now, they also have a very broad, it's mostly tech things, but it's pretty broad. They do have some other sections on about design and art and electronics and microcontrollers. And then even just things like professional speaking or marketing. It's kind of those other non-technical, but yet related to technology topics. And it's quite a broad subsection. And I've taken a number of Udemy classes over the years from different content providers, and they do try to keep the quality relatively high. There is some prerequisites. You have to submit a video and get approved before you can take your entire session live. So if you've got bad audio, bad video, bad lighting, they're going to kick that back to you and they're going to require you to change that. Now, they also have some pre-requirements on the content. For example, you can't advertise other things. Like, you can't use this as a medium to advertise a different channel or a different, maybe you're selling a book or something like that, or you're selling an offline course. You can't use this as a promotional material. But anyway, it's a great platform. They've done a nice job on their back end. The one downside that I feel about the Udemy is the way they've got the monetization model. Now, they used to be, you could set any price that you want for your course. And then if you drove the person to the site, so if they followed your link or you sent somebody an email and they followed it, you would get 100% of that course. So if your course sold for $50, you would get $50. Now, if Udemy took somebody to your site, so they were just browsing the Udemy index, or they just were responding to an email that Udemy sent out, and they ultimately take your course, you would get 50% of it. And so if your course was $50, then you'd get $25. And then Udemy would keep the other $25. Then they also have another component, which is an affiliate program, where if they've got contracts with affiliates, and if those affiliates sell them, then you and the affiliate split the other 50%. So Udemy always takes 50%, and then you and the affiliate take 50%. So if your course sold for $50 and the link came in via an affiliate, you would essentially get $12.50. But recently they changed some of that. And now they've got fixed tiered pricing where you can't just name any price you want. I think the cheapest right now is $20, although they do move things around a little bit. So the cheapest that you can put a course is $20, although technically you can also make it free. But say $20 is the cheapest. Now, out of that, again, if I drive somebody to the site, I'll get $20. If Udemy drives them to the site, I'll get $10. But here's the interesting thing. Out of all the courses that I've sold, and I've had over 450 students take my courses, only one has ever paid full price. Only one. Out of the others, I would say maybe less than 50 have I ever got the 50%. So if my course sold for the minimum $20, only about 50 of those have I ever got the full $10. The majority, the vast majority, almost all of them, my course sells for $5 and it falls under one of two categories. It's an affiliate link, in which case I may even get less, or Udemy is always incentivizing people that are on their site, take any course you want for $5, or actually I think it's $10, and then I get split on the $10, so I get five of it. So it's one of those things where it really doesn't matter what I set my price at or what my course is. In general, I almost always get $5 for the course. Now, my course has about 20 hours worth of video, and I think it's pretty good video. It's definitely not, you know, top quality, but I've done a nice job recording it and editing it. And I've got, it's nice, a smooth transition, and I've got artifacts that people can download for the video games. And I think it's very well organized as well. But again, for out of that 20 hours that somebody gets to take my entire course, in general, they're paying $10, and me as that content provider is only seeing $5. So it's a pretty low dollar amount. And honestly, it takes a lot of them to add up to anything. On average, my monthly Udemy payout is between $50 and $100. And it's pretty rare that it's $100. It's usually a lot closer to $50. And I've had some months where it's been $15 or $20 as well. It does vary all over the place. But I do notice, because I don't drive people to the site myself, most of what I see from people buying it is they're using coupon codes that Udemy is sending out, and Udemy is driving that traffic. So I'm usually getting that $250 or $5 per course, and it just takes a lot of them to add up. But I also noticed that during holidays, Udemy will run big sales, and they'll send a lot of emails out, and they'll do some ad marketing campaigns, and they do some remarketing too. So if you go visit my course on Udemy, you'll see my course pop up in your Facebook feed for a few days afterwards with some remarketing. So Udemy does put a lot of effort into selling courses. And I definitely notice when they are doing that promotion, it does do a big boost into my monthly sale. Now, I didn't originally set this up to sell courses, or I was never planning on making a lot of money through Udemy. So I'm not at all complaining about it, but that is the fact when you sell these things through a third-party content provider. So the second channel I want to talk about is my YouTube channel. Now, YouTube, up until recently, has never produced any money because of the way the pricing model works within YouTube. You have to have a certain minimum amount of hourly or of yearly views, view time, before you can even monetize your channel. And that makes perfect sense, because if you've just got a little channel where you might only be making $5 or $10 a year, they just don't want to mess around with those channels. And there's not a lot of motivation for the creators to continue to put time into them. And it's just something that YouTube doesn't monetize. You have to meet some certain thresholds. You have to have 1,000 subscribers, and you have to have a minimum of, I think it's 4,000 hours viewed before you can even monetize them. And that is an annual thing. So you have to maintain your channel in order to keep that monetization. Now, the monetization, if you can drive a lot of traffic to YouTube, you can actually make decent money. There's a lot of people that make a lot of money and make a full living off of their YouTube channel. But it does require tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of subscribers, and it requires just millions of views in order to make a difference. Now, again, it varies in so many different factors on the YouTube. For example, if you're a big enough seller, you can sell and make your own ads and sell your own ads, which case you can make more money on those. But also just being able to drive valuable ads to your channel will increase your cost as well. So if you've got a channel that is meeting kind of that 18 to 24 year old male, you're going to be able to get a lot more monetization out of your channel than if you're one that maybe is geared towards super young kids where they can't advertise the same amount, or maybe a very unique market where there just isn't a lot of advertisers wanting to reach those channels. So that also has a big impact. Now, my channel did not become monetized until earlier this year. I've got one video that just all of a sudden went viral, and it's a video where I'm making Alexa say nasty things. And it's been around for a couple of years, but it just never really took off. And then all of a sudden, one day it took off, and I noticed in my email, because I still get emails when anybody comments, it went from one or two comments a day to a few hundred comments in a day. At its peak, it was getting about 170,000 to 180,000 views per day. So anyway, that pushed me over all of the magic thresholds to monetize my channel. Now, I didn't end up monetizing it while it was at its peak, because what happens is when you cross that threshold, it goes into a manual review process at YouTube, and it took 45 days before it got approved. Well, during that 45 days, my popularity tanked. So I ended up missing out on all the monetization on that when it was at its peak. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. I still get quite a few views. I mean, it's tens of thousands of views per day, and I pick up a handful of new subscribers every day as well. I don't remember exactly what the number is off the top of my head, but I'm at about 4.6 million views total for the channel and about 4,500 subscribers. At that rate, and again, I'm still getting tens of thousands of views per day, I do get, it does vary a lot, but it's between about $90 and $100 a month right now. Now, that is probably going to go down over time unless I have some other videos that take off. And again, I missed that peak entirely. So I don't know if that's very representative, but that is what I'm getting out of that channel. And it'll take time before I see if that's going to withstand or not. It wasn't until I think June-ish or might have been May timeframe when it finally became monetized. And like I said, it was already kind of past the peak at that point. But anyway, my YouTube channel has a combination of a bunch of stupid videos around Alexa, which people love. And then I also have some electronics. And then I also have some advertising videos out there as well. So as I do events like Hack Sioux Falls, I'll go ahead and upload videos just to that same YouTube channel. And I know that's not ideal, because people will subscribe for one reason, and then if you send them videos for another, they often will unsubscribe or they just won't engage. But honestly, I don't really care that much, because the people that have subscribed and want to be there because of my Alexa videos, I'm not really going to be doing a lot more Alexa videos. So they might as well wander off if that's the only reason they're there on my channel. But anyway, that's my YouTube channel. I think there's around 110 or 115 videos. Most of them have less than 100 views. But again, they're there for my own purpose. And I've also done some things in the past with video games for our video gaming club, where I've played the games for the kids and then uploaded them. And of course, those only have 5 or 10 views in general. But I wasn't doing them as part of my YouTube channel. I was just using them to host my videos. The third channel I want to mention or content is Instructables. Now, if you're not familiar with Instructables, you really should check it out if you're a maker or a creator. Instructables is a website where, and if you have done anything and try to look up how to do stuff with the Arduino or even just other non-electronic stuff, you've probably come across an Instructables page. They're really popular for people creating step-by-step instructions around the builder maker movement and placing those on their Instructables website, and then just giving people a guide. And they do a lot of, they've just got a nice little platform to kind of edit those and to put them in place. And a lot of people will then create Instructables and advertise them and put them out there. Now, the interesting thing about Instructables is there's no way for me as a content creator to directly monetize anything. Now, I do get the slight cred of having something on Instructables, and then I get the search engine optimization of being on a credible website as opposed to my blog, which likely nobody would ever click on or go to. So they do have that, and of course, they have the eyeballs as well to drive people to your Instructable. But the downside is there's no way to monetize it, or at least there's no way for me to monetize it. Maybe there are some people that can monetize it if they're super popular on Instructables. But what you can do, there's some creative things that you can do, and I'll talk about those here in a few minutes, on how you could potentially monetize things like an Instructables page. But I do have only a few Instructables, and I've been surprised, and I put them up for, again, different purposes. I needed a way to promote what I was doing, and I didn't want to put it on my own blog because I thought, well, on the Instructables, I've got a little bit more credibility. So I've got things like my remote temperature sensor, the lab sensor project that I talked about a few podcasts ago. I have a complete Instructables of that. And then I have another one up there on remote server restart kit that I built. I don't think I've really talked a whole lot about that, but you can go check those out on Instructables. But out of those two, I've got tens of thousands of views across both of them. And I'm really surprised at that because neither one of them is really mainstream. Now, I've looked at some of the other Instructables and I'm always surprised at some of them from pretty well-known creators and makers. They just don't have a lot of views. So for whatever reason, the ones that I've put up there have got into channels that have quite a bit of views, and there's a lot of comments on them as well. Now, that also was at the very beginning, and over time, they become less and less popular. But anyway, that is what I have on Instructables. I do plan on posting more Instructables here in the future. They just take a while to create, and I like to create videos of doing a complete walkthrough and then having the step-by-step instructions to go along with it. And it just takes time both to shoot and edit the videos, but then also to go back after the project is completed and put it all back together. So the last channel that I'm going to mention that's kind of in that area where I can monetize it somewhat is my book, Wired for Coding. Now, I sell the book in three different forms, although two of them are the same, but through what's called KDP Select, which is the Kindle Direct Publishing, which is the Amazon platform. So through KDP Select, it's available on Amazon. And if you're part of this, the monthly subscription plan through, I forget what it's called, through Amazon's, through the Kindle platform, you can check my book out for free. You get one a month and then read it. And then I get money because you've checked it out and read it. Now, it's not the full book. My book sells for, I think it's like $4.50 or might be a little more than that. Might be $4.95. Or you can buy it directly through Kindle, which is the full $4.95. And then the second is that that's available on Amazon through their CreateSpace, which has been renamed now. I think it's back to now just KDP Select, where you can buy a soft cover, a print version, and then have it shipped to you just like you would any other book. And that's print on demand. And they do a fantastic job on that. I actually make the same amount of money. I think it's around $4. So it doesn't matter if you buy the paperback or the digital version, I make the same amount of money, although it costs you a lot more to buy the paperback version. And then the third part of that is that it is also listed in a system called Ingram Sparks. Now, Ingram Sparks also will put it into other stores in print version. So my book is then available in some other retailers, but only in the print version, not in the digital version. And then they do a direct kind of publishing as well. So print on demand. If you go to like Barnes & Noble and buy it, it will likely come from Ingram Sparks print on demand. And you won't know that. You'll just buy it and it'll show up in your door as a actual paperback. And they do a great job. The paperback is fantastic quality. Now, across all three of those, I'll make on my book, and again, it's not a super popular book, it'll be about, it depends a lot on the month, but between $40 and $100 across all three of those channels. And again, not a ton of money since it costs a lot of money to create and build a book, but obviously having the book has its own advantages. Now, I do spend about $30 a month, sometimes more, sometimes as much as $50 a month on advertising through something called the Amazon Marketing Services. And this is something where when you search for a book, it's actually true for other things too, but right now you can only buy, consumers can only, or myself as a producer of content, I can only buy ad space through the book section of it. So when you search for a specific keyword like computers or interviewing, my book may show up and say sponsored ad. Now, if that's the case, that's because that's an ad that I paid to have pop up in there. And I can pay, and the way it works out is you end up pay per click, like a lot of the platforms. And I spend about $30 to $50 a month on those ads to pop up. Now, in the end, it's a little bit of a wash because I spend not quite as much on ads as I do on the book sales. But what does happen is it just keeps it higher up in the rankings because it's now something that does get that periodic purchase. So I continue to do that. But anyway, at this point, I mean, I've sold hundreds of books through all of those platforms, and I've probably given away maybe 300 copies or so in the hard paperback version, in the paperback version. So that's what I've got from an online kind of digital content channels. And I talked a little bit about what I make on each of them. And they're all less than $100 a month on all of those. So now let's talk a little bit about where I actually make real money through these platforms outside of selling direct. So the first is, obviously, if I sell a book direct, I can buy them from the publisher for about $5 a paperback, and then I can sell them for $15. So in some cases, that makes perfect sense. If somebody wants to buy a copy, they can buy it from me. I can make $10 instead of $4 by buying it from Amazon. But obviously, I'm not going to go out and sell a whole bunch of books. It takes a lot of time and effort, and it's just, you know, it's just honestly just not worth the trouble. But where I have done things is I've sold my books as part of sponsorship, or I have sold them in bulk, like somebody wants to buy 50 copies or 20 copies. And that's where you can make some real money, because I can buy them for $4 or $5. I can then turn around and sell them for $15 as part of a sponsorship, but I can sell them in a group quantity. So a couple of places where this has happened. In this event that I'm speaking at here in Yankton in a couple of weeks, they did have some sponsorship money that they were able to buy 50 copies of my book. And now those books will be given out to 50 students. So it's a win-win. It's a way where they can bring in sponsors. The sponsors can feel good because they're giving books back to the community. And they can put their little, they can put a sticker on it and say, hey, this book was provided by Company X. And I'm totally fine with that. And again, they buy those directly from me. And so I can make some money out of those. Another is that when we did Startup Weekend last year, I reached out to one of the banks and said, hey, would you be willing to put $500 in sponsorship and we'll buy some books? Some, I'll give a copy of my book to everybody, and then we'll take all the extra money that's left over and we'll just buy other business related books and then hand them out to the attendees. They thought that was a great idea. So that's another example where I was able to sell some of my books as a group. So look at those different areas on where you might be able to sell those. Now, it is a little bit harder with a digital copy, even though a lot of people want the digital copy, because there is no way in Amazon right now where I can give you a code or I could sell it, and then you just use that code to get it distributed free via Amazon. It's one of the big complaints that a lot of people have with the Amazon direct publishing, but it does make sense on why they don't do that. So another area where I make money on is my Udemy courses. Is I will sell, because I can give you a coupon, which will give you the course for free, I can then turn around and sell those coupons off in the real world, or I can make them part of another plan or another purchase. So for example, as one of the bonuses that I give out to all of the kids that participate in our gaming boot camps each summer, is I give them a coupon code that lets them use or take my course on Udemy for free. Now, the Udemy course has a lot more games than what we teach during our camp. So this is a way where they can learn another, you know, 30 different games if they want. Or if they missed something or they want to go back or weeks go by and they forget how to do something, I have all of the games that we covered in my Udemy course. So that's another great way to do that. Then I can tie that back into a $250 ticket and say, well, I'm going to take $5 out of that ticket as being the cost of this coupon. And so that's another way in which you can do it. And then I have also taken those coupons and as kind of had them be part of sponsorships of other STEM events in the area. So for example, they might be a prize that somebody gives out, or there's another group in town that has bought some in the past where they just then give the kids the coupon codes and then they pay me the $20 for the course itself. So that's another way to do it. The other is that I can use these courses as ways of promoting and helping sponsor our in-person events. So for example, any of the mentors that want to come or our instructors, instead of me sitting down and spending 20 hours going through the curriculum with them, they can just take this Udemy course at their own leisure, go back, redo things that they maybe didn't quite understand until they get it down just right. So that's another way. So now again, I'm using this online content to further promote our person camps that we do in person. And then the last one I wanted to talk just briefly about, and I mentioned it earlier around the Instructables, is being able to do affiliate marketing. Now, you may be familiar with what Amazon does, and there's others as well, but Amazon's the big one. So in Amazon, if I had a product that Amazon sells, and I can become an affiliate member, and they'll give me a code, and it's embedded in a URL, I can then use that URL in the description of my Instructables that says, well, if you need an Arduino Uno, click this link to go to Amazon. When the person clicks that link, it makes a little tiny tag and says, okay, this link came from me, from Will. If that person ends up buying it, I will get a small cut of Amazon's price. Now, it's a small percentage. It's a really small amount, but it does add up over time. if you've got 10,000 people viewing your Instructable account, and out of all those 10,000 people, if 100 of them click the link, and out of those, 10 or 15 of them buy it, you might be able to make $20. Again, it's a small dollar amount, but it can add up if you have a large enough numbers. Now, the other interesting thing about the affiliate links is when they follow that affiliate link, if they happen to buy something else at the same time that they check out, you will also get a percentage of that purchase, and it'll be a smaller percentage. But it does happen where somebody will click a $4 Arduino or sensor and then put a big screen TV in their cart and check them both out at the same time. Now, in those cases, it's not uncommon to get a $20 or a $30 affiliate fee paid out by Amazon. So it can add up, and it is something that, again, doesn't cost you anything as a content creator. You just simply have to use your affiliate link when you link over to different products within Amazon. So I would definitely do that if you've got something where you can point to an exact Amazon product and sell it. And you may only make $100 a year, but you know what? That's $100 that you didn't have by selling anything at all within Instructables. So at the minimum, I would do things like that on those platforms that you can't directly monetize. So anyway, that's a quick rundown. I'm sure there's others, and I'd love to hear them. If you've got ideas, shoot them my way. I'd love to hear how you've been monetizing things that you can't directly monetize online. And then, of course, you can always do things like paid webinars or paid consulting and things like that. I mean, the obvious ones that everybody does. But what I was trying to focus on here today is maybe a few of those ones that you're not that familiar with. So what are some of the key takeaways here today? Well, you know, you won't make a lot of money directly on any of these channels. And that's just unfortunate, but that's just the way it works. You don't own the platform, you don't own the medium, you don't own the marketing, and they're doing a lot of these things for you. And technically, they're doing them for free. They're distributing the content, they're finding the audience. So it does make sense that they're going to take their fair cut out of it. And of course, you don't control it either. So if anything happens and Udemy decides to shut up shop tomorrow, I do not have a channel anymore, and I don't own those 450 students. In fact, I don't even know who they are. I have no way of contacting them. So always take that into consideration. And also just accept the fact that unless you're one of those top 1% of content providers on any of those channels, you're probably not going to make a living on it. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, and it also doesn't mean there's not creative ways that you can't make some extra money. The other advantage of teaching or providing content in any one of these is just being able to help build that credibility. So I frequently will list things like my Udemy course and my YouTube channel in my credentials when I'm speaking or when I'm submitting applications for grant funding and those types of things. It does matter. It does make a big difference. If they go look them up later, they can see, oh, wow, you know, you've got a best-selling course on Udemy. They don't necessarily need to know that I only make $30 a month on that, but it does show off well if people do want to pursue those. And then also the last thing I'll just mention is, you know, look for those creative ways to sell. You know, it might be through a sponsorship, or maybe there's even some giveaways. Maybe you can even reach out to some of the local nonprofits and say, you know, hey, I'm going to give you 20 coupons for my course. You can go ahead and give those away as prizes, trying to drive either traffic to their site or likes to their webpage or their Facebook page, you know, things like that. I mean, if nothing else, you can have a little bit of goodwill, and maybe you'll get a little bit of advertising in return. So anyway, if you got any other suggestions, I'd love to hear them. I'd love to find interesting and creative ways to monetize the content. I do enjoy producing content. The thing I don't like about it is you end up putting 20, 30, 40 hours into a single piece, and then you're only able to make over the lifetime of that piece a few $100s. So that's always kind of annoying. But anyway, it's all kind of about the journey. And if you've got other ideas, I'd love to hear them. Well, anyway, well, thanks for joining me today. If you've not left a review on Apple, we'd love to have you shoot over there and give us a 5-star review. It makes a huge difference. And as always, you can join the conversation over on our Facebook page. Just go ahead and search for Go Hack Something and we'll pop right up. To subscribe, head over to gohacksomething.com where you'll find all of the links, or you can just search for Go Hack Something wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, and go hack something. Oh, and go teach something.